Good evening, everyone. This is 1 November, Wednesday, 2017, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and this is the Courtroom Observer's Call. Before I get started on anything tonight, I'd just like to inform everyone that Jan's wife is in the hospital, still in ICU, and in case you don't know, she's battling cancer, and it's probably going to be a long haul of treatments. And so I'd like for everyone to take a couple of moments and direct some well wishes to Jan's wife. I know that it'll be appreciated. And maybe include Jan in that too, because he's going to be a big part of her treatment. And, of course, you got to know how it's going to work on his mind. So I'm going to take a couple of moments right now for that. Okay, thank you, guys. Glad to see all the smiling faces here this evening. I am not sure what I should talk about, but how's everybody coming with their reading of the Constitution and learning what's in it? Has anybody done anything?
I'm just trying to stay in shape and do all the right things. Okay, I have four little girls. So, you know, I was doubling and tripling up on bras. I mean, when you are thick busted, it's very difficult to get a sports bra fixed the way you need to be.
So are you saying when you wear the traditional ones, which are like a really stretchy nylon mesh?
Yeah.
I hear somebody speaking, but I can't make out what is being said.
You do the shape, not having the universe, and the zipper helps. One good feeling, because when you put on a compression bra and try to compress the bowels, if you will, it pushes everything together.
You stand in there, it doesn't look bulky.
No.
Okay, well, anyway, you know, we do have things to be thinking about. We all realize how important the courtroom observing is. We've been talking about it every week. And I'm always happy to see you people here. And I keep hoping that maybe we'll get some more people coming in. This is something that all of us need to be involved in. And we need to be able to talk about things that happen when we are in the courts doing courtroom observing, what the experiences have been. And maybe make suggestions on what we can do to improve what we do. You know, the courts are not getting any better. They're all stacked against us, it would seem. Hopefully for not much longer. Hopefully we're going to be making progress. But we all need to remember that we need to look the best we can and try to look the part of belonging there. You know, we, by being there, we're putting fear in the hearts of the judge and the prosecutors and any of the other people there. But we're also doing those things that can improve what happens in the courts. With our affidavits, we are helping the defendant. And with our knowledge of the Constitution and the civics, the common law, then we are more, being more knowledgeable, we're able to recognize that which is being done wrong, the things that we can place in our affidavits. And it also gives us a knowledge to where we can talk to our neighbors, talk to our friends, talk to anybody that might be willing to listen. You know, let them know. Teach others. Most people don't realize what their rights are. They don't realize what they've lost or are losing. They need to know how to live free, how to take back their rights. And by us having the knowledge to teach, then what we're doing extends far out away from the courthouses even. Even though our main duty is at the courthouse, it doesn't stop there. We can all be teaching each other. We can have that knowledge. Last week, we did some talking about the Constitution. And I truly enjoyed how all that conversation was going. Does anybody have anything that they need to bring up?
Yes, Robert.
Yes, Mike.
Okay, I'm working with a lady out of Indiana who's involved in a major custody battle for her grandchildren. And they ruled against her in the court, and now she's doing an appeal. And she's going to be having, there's going to be a trial at this appeal. I don't know why there's a trial. Usually in an appeal, they just do it behind the scenes, you know, the three-judge panel does. But in any event, there's going to be a trial, to my knowledge, according to her, and it's going to be in Birmingham, Alabama, and the date has not yet been settled because the DHR, which is the Child Protection Agency in Alabama, just filed their response to the brief. So is there any way possible, do you think, that we may be able to get some courtroom observers when the time comes in Alabama around Birmingham?
Well, as soon as you have the information on, you know, a date and a time and where at, you know, the courthouse address and that kind of thing.
Right, right, exactly.
Let Terry know, and we'll send out a notice to everyone that's in the area.
Okay.
And we'll do our best to get some people there.
Right, right. Because the whole thing is basically all fraud, lies, and mistruths. And they don't want to give the grandchildren up because there's four of them, and the money involved that they're raking in off these four kids, and they're abusing, they're in foster homes, and they're just abusing these kids medically and physically and emotionally. And the grandmother wants them bad, and she's been fighting for about the last 3 years trying to get them out of the foster homes.
Well, God bless her, and she deserves all the help she can get. And
absolutely.
And you hit it, you know, the money. Money is, it's all about money.
Yep.
And every time I even think about that, I get very concerned about the safety of the children. Because I have friends who are adults now, but when they were 3 years old, they were taken from their parents. And they were across the country from each other, but they were taken from their parents, and they were placed in a home that was involved in child trafficking.
Wow.
And these three-year-old children were used as sex slaves.
Oh my God.
And they did finally escape, but they were in their teens at that time. And so you can only imagine what hell they went through because of CPS. And so, yes, anytime somebody's fighting for children like that, God bless them. I want to be able to help them any way I can.
Right. This lady's a bull in a china shop, and she ain't giving up at all. And, boy, she's going after them with a vengeance. And she wants to get them so bad, and she's not going to quit. She ain't going to quit. And I told her, I says, like what John was talking about Monday, I told her, in the event that the appellate court does not rule in your favor, don't get frantic-y and don't think it's all over, because it's not over till the fat lady sings. I says, then it's your chance to take them into the federal court and
right.
go after them and put them on the defendant stand where you can bring them up with a jury. And she's trying to get a jury in this appellate court, and she's meeting some resistance to it. So, because they said a jury is only good for criminal trials, and which is a bunch of crap anyways. So,
well, I don't care what kind of a trial it is. The defendants have the right to a jury.
Right. I understand that, too.
So,
but they don't.
You know, she's got to keep fighting. Never give up.
Exactly. Exactly. Even though there's not a money figure involved in this, the CPS down there in Alabama has committed crimes. Like, they've perjured themselves. They've lied. They've filed false and fraudulent information into the courts. They've trespassed on the kids and on her. And they kidnapped the children. They never even had a warrant to take them originally.
Right.
But it seems like the judges just don't seem to want to care. And they ruled against her.
That's because they're getting money from it.
Oh, absolutely. Big bucks.
And it's just like I have an investigation going on up here in the state of Washington with CPS. And we know that CPS is taking children and providing, you know, these children could be anywhere from, you know, three up into their teens, and they look for children that don't have parents or don't have anybody that really cares about them. And they're taking these children and providing them out to judges, police, lawyers for their own sexual satisfaction.
Oh, my God.
And even the legislature in Washington knows that it's happening.
They're a part of it.
Now, well, this legislature, I've been talking to one of them, and she is just really disgusted, but she can't get the governor to make a move on it. And
wow.
So she has some evidence. I have some evidence, and we're working trying to make the case. But it's happening everywhere in every state.
Right, right. How did you dig that information up?
I have a friend that lives up in Seattle, and seems that he knew somebody that inside of CPS that told him about what was happening.
Wow.
And so he called me in to try to take care of it.
Well, I wish you luck. God bless you. I hope you can knock it out of there.
Well, I've been doing work fighting human trafficking for several years, and it's sad. It's just heartbreaking. I see 9-year-old children out on the street at night selling their bodies because they've been threatened to a point where they'll do anything they're told.
Wow. That's disgusting. That's an abomination for sure.
Yes. And I just, you know, sometimes I feel like I just want to take a gun and go out there and hunt these people down, especially the ones that are paying for these things, for the services.
Oh, man.
We must stop the demand in order to stop what's happening. And I see people all the time, when they see something happening, they turn their heads so that they don't have to admit that it's happening in this country. And it's the same thing with CPS. People are turning their heads, turning a blind eye to what is happening.
Well, and then, Robert, you said that sometimes you'd like to take a gun and go out there. We've hired people to do that. They're carrying guns, and they're out there, and they're supposed to be, you know, reporting when they see the same thing that you see, and they're not doing it. Maybe, I don't know if they're getting threatened to or what, but we do already have people out there with guns that are supposed to be protecting them. To me, that's bad,
well,
too, you know?
What I'm finding in my work, I have to be very careful. I go out and I do a lot of search and rescue. And I cannot find a child, throw her in my car, and take her anywhere. Because there's always that chance that they're going to file something against you.
Right.
And so what I do is I locate them, and then I have to rely on a police officer to come and pick them up. And I say child because it could be a boy or a girl. And it's here anymore. It just has to be a boy as it is a girl. And what I find is that there's a lot of judges and police officers that are being paid to turn a blind eye to it. And so I have to be very careful in my work to find a police officer that I can trust wherever I might be, and then call that person. Always call that person, because if I call just any officer, I might find one that's being paid to protect the pimps or whatever, and they're going to haul me in.
That's right. So,
and also, I found that when it comes to especially women who, in their adult, either of their adults or in their high up in the teens, if they've been submitted to a lot of beatings and that kind of thing, then they get to a point where they feel like they have to have that pain. And if you try to rescue them, they'll turn on you. Because if you rescue them, then they won't have that pain that they crave.
Wow.
So it's a dangerous thing to be doing, but, you know, you can't stop. You got to do it. And so CPS is the biggest trafficking ring in the country. And so my heart goes out to anybody that's lost children to CPS. And they deserve all the help we can give them.
Well, that's greatly appreciated for sure. And the fact is, with these children, it's not that the parents don't care about them. The parents do, but CPS makes it so hard for them that they want to commit suicide and give up because they know that they can't fight them. Because
you're absolutely
they're so
right.
And hungry. And they're just like sharks with their teeth open, and they're going to go after the parents. They go after, they ruin their lives, and they finally give up, and they say, the heck with it. I'm not going to go. I can't go through all this.
Yep. Well, some of the, in the state of Washington, some of the kids who, see, after they turn a certain age, then CPS turns them loose. And we've had some of these people who have been turned loose, who have been used as sex slaves, have given us reports on what's going on, so we have that, but it's like pulling teeth trying to get it into the courts.
But then that creates a problem, too, as well, because they're not going to believe a child. They're going to say, oh, that child will say anything, and
yes,
they don't rely upon it. Unless the child is reporting against their parents, making lies against their parents, then the parents have all heck to pay. Because they do believe what the children says at that point. It's a double standard that they have and are using.
Yes, absolutely. And, yes, Jim.
The problem there is that when people are honest, and there may just not be that many around, you can recognize when somebody is lying, telling the truth. We've got a country of liars, first in politics, and then it's been going on so long as people have learned how to make a living and survive by being liars.
Yes.
And so the whole thing is like a big, huge organized crime syndicate that we're dealing with.
Well,
and,
you're
absolutely right,
and that's our governments, for the most part, are nothing more than the mafia.
Yeah, I was calling them. It's like Al Capone took over.
Yes.
Which is really a sad thing. You got a book called Handbook of New Paradigm, and it says all these evil minds that they go into feeding frenzies off the energy of injury to other people, which would include children. And if you've got a sound mind, you can analyze this stuff and see just how sick these people are and why they operate the way they do. And it's just absolutely amazing to me to come to realize how pervasive it is across the entire country.
Well, I will say that a few years ago, I got the goods on a pimp. I rescued the woman that he was pimping out against her will. And I got the guy arrested. Went to court. And he stood up in court and started demanding that the judge turn this woman back over to him because she was his slave and that he had a contract that she had signed. The judge told him, slavery is not legal in America. He says, I don't care. She's my slave and I want her back. And so then his attorney stood up and said, Your Honor, can we have a meeting in the back room without the, without our attorney there? He just wanted to talk with the judge. And the judge says, well, it's just about lunchtime. Court adjourned until 1 p.m. And he went into the back room with this attorney. And when we all returned to court at 1 p.m., the judge says, well, there was some electronic harassment. And for that, you will have 2 days of community service. Told that to the man that was arrested in court. But he says, I will not give this lady any protection, and I'm dismissing this charge against the man, the human trafficking charge. So in other words, that attorney went back and paid that judge off.
That's what they're doing, 24/7. That's why they built golf courses, I think.
I ended up having to provide protection for this lady until we could get him out of her hair.
You're in Oregon, right?
I'm in Oregon, yeah.
So are you near one of the big cities where this kind of activity is?
Well, where it actually happened was in one of the small towns.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter where it's at. Money talks. And they've got a lot of it. And that's what we're up against. And this is why, we really need to take back our courts, clean them up so that we can start prosecuting.
And we need enforcement.
We definitely need enforcement.
Mr. President Trump.
I am so happy that he's there. This is the best chance that we have ever had to make headway on taking back our courts and our rights. And we must protect him to make sure that he is safe and succeeds. Right now, I'm asking him to... during the inauguration speech, He said it was a transfer of power back to the people. And I want him in another speech to make a declaration that the United States is abiding by the 1789 Constitution and the rule of law, the law of the land, the Constitution, and that our laws are the common law laws, not statutes. I'm hoping to get him to do that.
Indictments of judges in any city or town in any
he'll
part
see
of the
a
country
sheriff.
With...
The sheriff has the power to arrest a judge if he sees them doing wrong. However, the states have put them under their jurisdiction and telling the sheriffs that they have to take, you know, their orders from the judge. So we've got to give the sheriff the protection that he needs to go out and do his job properly. And the more we fight in the courts, the more we can, more headway we make by being a courtroom observer. You know, it's all working toward that end of giving the sheriff back there.
So people building,
you know, what,
pressure.
Right. People building pressure. And we need to do it.
There's millions of them.
So we have power, but we got to stand together to use it. And this is one of the things as a courtroom observer we're doing, and it's also what we're doing as a committee of safety. And those two groups will eventually become one. And so we have the courtroom observing going. We are making headway with the committees of safety, but we have a long way to go. And so, you know, I just think about all the horrible things that are happening to our children, and it just keeps driving me to continue. But you know, I'm 74 years old, so I, you know, how much longer can I keep on driving? But I will as long as I can. And I think that's something that we all have to do. And so God bless everybody that's fighting for the kids. God bless everybody that's doing a courtroom observing and writing affidavits and improving their knowledge by learning the Constitution and common law. You know, common law is actually so simple. Because really, if you know in your heart that what you're about to do is right, you're practicing common law. Because that's what it's all about. You're, what you know to be right is right.
Well, Robert, I thank you. I'm going to yield. And just listen. Thank you very much, and I'll let you guys know when I get any kind of information.
Yes, do that. Stay on top of that, and let us know as soon as you know, and we'll get the notices out to everyone. and we'll push hard to get people there.
Excellent. Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
That's what we do.
I know. Okay. Good deal.
All
thank
right.
you, Robert. Yep, thank you.
You. Now, does anybody else have any anything to add or have something to discuss?
Well, Robert, before the call, I was wondering about, this is Jan in Kansas. I forgot to introduce myself. But I was thinking that it might be sooner than we think, and it might not, that we've got our common law courts back, because just even listening to you guys tonight, these are common law issues. They have no, you know, other than to traffic children or, you know, the elders or anything
right.
like that, you know, in the nursing centers and stuff. There's no cause for them to be going into equity court because what I've realized too is that the equity courts, I think I'm right on this, the equity courts have just slurped up the common law jurisdiction, and they're the ones, these judges that are raping the children and whatnot, they're the ones who are now setting precedent on the record saying that they're blended jurisdictions and whatnot, and they're just changing our precedents that have been on, you know, on the books for decades and maybe even centuries. And so I was just wondering if we had, what would be the difference if we had the jurisdiction, common law jurisdiction, up in our county courts and our state courts? What would be the difference between the way that we would courtroom observe on those and the way that we're sharing with each other to courtroom observe in statutory or equity courts, or this blend, this law merchant and, you know, the jurisdiction of the sea, all that nonsense that's not even supposed to be, you know, for people, men and women, in our courts on our land? And I yield.
Well, first of all, there under common law, there would not be as many people involved in the courts because of the fact that no victim, there's no crime. Also, under common law, with the common law grand jury, everyone arrested, if it's something that the police have planned on, they want to go and rest, and they go to the grand jury first, and they lay out their case to the grand jury, and the grand jury decides whether they have what they need to make the arrest, or they say, no, don't make the arrest. And if it's something where, say, somebody killed somebody else and the sheriff was on scene and arrested them, then within one or two days, there would be a grand jury called to review what had happened. And then they would make a decision on whether or not the case moved forward. And no doubt if it was a killing, the sheriff has the evidence, they would pass it on to the court. But today, under statutes, everybody is just marched right into the courthouses. It's money, money, money. And so, as a courtroom observer in common law, there wouldn't be a whole lot to do because the judges are just administrators. They don't make the decisions. It's the grand jury that says yay or nay to the case, and it's the petit jury, the 12-person jury, that decides the case. The case and the law that the person was arrested under. And they also decide the punishment. The judge is just there to ensure that the court is run properly. And so you're not going to see all this corruption in a common law court. It's the people that are trying the case. You have a jury of your peers, truly. And
I see what you're
saying. They make all the decisions.
Yeah, thank you, Robert.
Yep. So, you know, when you give one person too much power, they become corrupt. The more power that you give them, the more corrupt they are. That's human nature. But, you know, you present a case to a 12-member jury and they've come together just for that case, they're not corrupt. They'll try to do the best job they can and make the best decision they can. And what was it? God, I had something else on mine and it kind of slipped out on me. But, yes. Also, many times with a common law grand jury, it may be a case where, yes, there was a victim, and yes, the case might go to court, but they also have the authority to possibly work it out without it going to court. You know, they might come up with a solution and it not go to court at all, but it would still be a binding solution. And so once again, I say not many people would be going through the courts.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying.
Yep. So,
if I was a bar attorney, Robert, if I was a bar attorney, I'd be real upset with you because I wouldn't be making any money in a long, drawn-out trial.
That's right. That's right. And we're gonna upset a whole bunch of bar attorneys. But that's something that we look forward to.
Yeah, they better start getting prepared. We don't want to T-bone them.
Well, you know, they're taking advantage of us, and so I don't feel bad at all about putting them in their place.
I don't either. I was just teasing.
So, yeah, it's common law is wonderful. It's very simple. It's easy to remember the law. Before you were even born, were imprinted with right from wrong. And people know instinctively right from wrong. And if your heart tells you that it's right, by all means, it's right. So,
I am Val from Florida. How you doing?
Yes. How you doing, Val?
I haven't been. I've been listening to you, Robert, and thank you for your comment. The biggest business in America today is police, lawyers, judges, and prisoners. You cannot outsource them to China. It's too bad. But unfortunately, you know, if we come back to the common law, there would be no jobs in America. And they know, and that's what they do to us. I just glanced through the John book for the sheriffs, and I think if every one of us should purchase as many as you can and give to anybody a regular cop from the police department, not necessarily the sheriff, elected official, if the cop pull over, give it to him, give it to everybody. You cannot lose the case in court. What John wrote in this book is excellent. That's I'm going to yield on.
Well, with the my comments on the sheriff's handbook is it's good, and it's the way it should be. But most of the sheriffs know what their job is supposed to be. Even though the states have put them under such pressure to follow their orders and as statutes, they balance. The sheriff has to balance what he does between being right and wrong. And many sheriffs are forced to do things that they don't want to do simply because they do not have the backing of the people in their counties. If every sheriff had total backing of the people in their counties, they would then have the support they need to do the right thing always. Now, we have a sheriff here in Oregon, and during the standoff here in Oregon with the Patriots taking over the refuge and all, he went down there and took a look at the situation. It wasn't in his county, and people got angry because he went down there and he visited with the Patriots to get their side of the story. And so Oregon officials, governor and everybody, came after him and wanting to take his job away from him. And see, a sheriff has to have a law enforcement certificate. And under the rules of the state, if they pull that law enforcement certificate, the man or woman can no longer work in law enforcement. Well, they tried to do that to him. And the people in his county all stood up and said, no, you're not doing anything to him. He is our sheriff and he will remain our sheriff. And there was an election, and they voted him back in for another term. He's still the sheriff there. But that's what happens when you have the backing of the people. But without that backing, they don't have any, you know, they're pretty much forced to do what they're told or lose their jobs. They must have the support. And so one thing we must do is try to get people to support their sheriff. Now, law enforcement, other than sheriff, there's a lot of good officers out there. However, they are code enforcement. They're hired by the corporation to guard the state, the cities and towns. They're not true law enforcement. And so they gladly just follow their orders. The sheriff is the only true law enforcement officer, and he is the highest ranking law enforcement officer in his county. He's above the feds. Even the marshals. Marshals have the same duties as a sheriff. However, marshals are appointed by the president, where the sheriffs are elected by the people. The people are above the president, above the elected officials, and so the sheriff ranks higher than that marshal. But whenever you, if you talk to the state or any of them, they would have you believe that the marshal ranks higher than the sheriff. So once again, I say the sheriff must have the people backing him. We, the people, are the only ones that can fire the sheriff, and we are the ones that hire him through a vote.
I think that Jim in New Mexico, I think the distribution of the sheriff's handbooks is going to be a great thing, because those 20 deputies or however many in a particular sheriff's office, they may have different opinions about how things ought to be run, and they could get a hold of that handbook and read what a sheriff's powers are. They might suddenly become ambitious and decide they ought to run for sheriff and change things.
I pray they do. I want that handbook to be a success.
I had an incident last weekend selling an appliance. I had a city cop. He's a lieutenant supervisory position. Drove 2.5 hours from another part of New Mexico. He's in a town of about 10,000 people, 20-unit police department. And at some point in the conversation, he complained to me that he needs to live in a different city because he's arrested so many people that he and his family can't go anywhere, can't go out to dinner, can't have any fun because they're always running into the families of people they put in jail. And about a day later, I started sending him information about, it's unconstitutional to arrest people for traffic tickets, et cetera. And the conversation, he actually appeared to be a pretty good guy listening.
Well,
and I told him in the end, I said, you ought to run for sheriff.
There's a lot of good officers out there. I don't hate the police. I don't like the ones that are, there are the corrupted ones that I don't like. But for the most part, police are good people. But they're told to arrest all these people to where by the Constitution and common law, they should not be doing that. In fact, a police officer, instead of sitting out there begging people, watching for them to do wrong, they should be out there mixing with the people, just showing the people that they're there, protecting them. They should be they should be good members of the community and out there mixing with the people and be friends with the people.
Presumably in the Republican form of the government, I learned something or I read something, the government can only give you the advice.
Right. That's absolutely right. Most people don't understand that. They're just advisory. And that's because they are our servants.
That's it.
So, when you look at the power structure in America, God is at the top of the list. And then we, the people, are under God. And then it's the Constitution. So we're actually above the Constitution. We wrote it. We're the only ones that can interpret it. And then elected officials are under the Constitution. And the Constitution was written to put restrictions on our elected officials, restricting their authority. We have given them some authority, but we have not given them all authority. We are still above them. And see, they are not, no legislature has the authority to write law that controls our behavior. And if they would live by that, much better world.
Well, I think NLA is starting to get that message out to these judges and legislature people and police officers. And even though they're not going to change what they're doing, I think they're becoming well aware of the fact that there is a Constitution and the power structure that you just described, Robert. And I think that is starting to have a big impact on their habits.
Well, we must remember, come election time, ask the right questions and ask lots of them. And if they're not knowledgeable about the Constitution, then they have no reason to be an elected official. And if they're not willing to abide by the Constitution, no matter how well they, how educated they are on it, they have no business being in the legislature or any other elected office. And so we, the people, must ask more questions, and we must know, we must be able to determine what these elected officials know about the Constitution and common law. Ask them if they've had a civics course. Ask them if they've taken a Constitution course. You know, find out what their background is. And if it doesn't fit what we believe an elected official should know or should abide by, don't elect them. I truly believe that it does not matter whether they are Democrat, Republican, or independent. I believe that if we select the right people, no matter what party, we select the people that believe in the Constitution and the rule of law, then we will have good elected officials, no matter who has the majority. But it's up to we, the people, to determine who those officials should be.
Yeah, and Robert, make one more comment. I know we're getting short on time. But something that I've been noticing just within myself is, and it was, kind of perked up when I heard you say about, tonight about having just our people, or, other people have commented too, just having ordinary, like us, you and me and others in the communities run for office. Because what I'm noticing, here's where I was going with that, I'm kind of going around the bush, but is that I'm not criticizing anybody because I do it too. We've been trained to do it. We've been trained to call those people officials, our authorities. I mean, we are systematically trained that they are the authority and not us. And I'm just wondering, in my own heart, if I start trying to change my mind and start realizing and start trying to call them what they are, which is hired employees or servants. If they hold public office, they're a servant of the people, each,
right,
and of the people, the society. And if they're a hired person, then they're, a hired person like I've been. And
well, you're
I just wonder.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. You're on the right track. And see, they have decided that, and it's working. You know, they want to be called the Honorable Senator such and such.
Mm-hmm.
We don't call our employees the Honorable so-and-so, such-and-such, or whatever.
Right.
They're employees. We call them by their name, and that's it. Their name or their, you know, senator. We don't call them the Honorable. Nobody calls their employees the Honorable. So, yeah, you're right. We need to think like that, that we are the boss. We hold the power.
Yeah, and even like in our courts with the administrative hearing officers calling themselves judges and having us call them judges, or even, I'm not sure about this, but even calling the magistrate when they are an administrative hearing officer that's working statutorily off of the record, and they cannot make any kind of decision whatsoever. They have to go by statutory authority. They are not a judge, and I'm not even sure they're a magistrate. I believe they're just an administrative hearing officer.
Yeah,
they're committing fraud. That's all they are.
They are. They want to be called Your Honor. Or judge such and such. But I don't do that. When I'm in court, I may say judge, but I don't say Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Well, because those courts that they're in, since they've taken over common law and swirled everything together with the law of the sea, they're not even in a common law jurisdiction really at all. They're just up there just like people have said, you know, and well, like the judges, I'm even doing it now, like the administrative hearing officers, they say, I'm the God in this court. I'm the ruler in this court. I'm the this, I'm the that. You know, well, get over yourself because, you know, we're kind of catching up with that and realizing that they're just a hearing officer.
Yeah, that's an absolute lie when they say they're the God, it's their court. It's the people's court, and it's the jury that has the jurisdiction.
Yeah, and one more point, even if there's no 12-person, competent, untainted, unstacked jury in there, that court is the people's court still, even though they've claimed it, it's the people's court still because it is funded by the fruit of the labor of the people and it belongs to them.
Yeah, and that's just like we have the right to record everything that goes on in any of our public buildings, but yet the way it is now, they don't allow you to bring a recorder or camera or anything in and record. They allow you to write it, but they don't allow you to record. That's because they don't want people outside the court to know what they're saying. They don't want it on a recorder. So yeah, you're right, and we need to be thinking the fact that we, the people, are the boss. We make the rules. We tell them; they don't tell us.
Yeah, and as I'm thinking about it, and then I'll close or yield. But as I'm thinking about it, I believe that they can't even call themselves magistrate because isn't the magistrate the one who directs the traffic, so to speak, as you guys say, NLA says, the magistrate directs the traffic in the common law jurisdiction.
Right.
So they can't even claim to be a magistrate, but that might not be right.
Well, they're strictly under statute. and under statute, then they can, you know, they can claim anything they want. Won't be true, but they can claim anything they want. And under statutes, and this is where they have you all the time, is even if there is no statute concerning the case, then a judge under statutes can make a new statute to cover it. And then other judges in the country abide by that. So they make rules as they go.
Yeah, and I'm not arguing with you, but, I mean, other people have found it too, or I wouldn't be able to find it. But there is, there are statutes that say that they can't do that. They have to show if their subject matter jurisdiction is challenged, and that's what we would be challenging, even like with the grandma that's getting the little children taken away. I mean, subject matter jurisdiction in their statutory world, it's a fiction world. Statutory law isn't law, it's a fiction, just like they're fictional people that are fictional, artificial fictions at law. I mean, they even admit it. But even I could get that for next week and bring it where it does tell that if the subject matter jurisdiction of a court is challenged, and I'm not necessarily saying that anybody should do this, you know, but I have, and if it's challenged, that they have to provide on the record, which means they have to show you which statute they're basing their decision on. And then John and Veronica,
that's Hagen.
That's Hagen versus
Levine, Jan.
Pardon me?
Hagen's versus Levine. Captain John brought that up, and also Brooks versus Yaki.
Okay,
but you're right on track. It's great to see you've been researching and studying. You're figuring it all out.
Yeah, and like John on our Thursday night call, and Veronica pointed out, though, that we do really, really, I mean, we need to learn this for if we go into courtroom observing. If we have already given conditional acceptance of their offer, which I did that in mine. I'm learning this because I had to do it. But if we have gone forward, they give us a crazy offer, like the offer to take the children away, the grandchildren, and then we go back with an offer. I'm not trying to teach anybody anything legal. I'm just saying what I did. So with me, I got a crazy offer, and I came back with a conditional offer of acceptance upon these conditions that they prove, you know, bring forward proofs of claim of this and blah, blah, blah. And you go through that and then offer an offer to settle and close out the matter or the account. And then they have to prove legally. They don't. My person I'm dealing with just conveniently ignored everything that I did that was according to their rules. And so anyway, but I'm just saying the conditional acceptance of the offer is important. And I believe,
you need to know what you're doing when you go in there, because they bank on the idea that you may have a little bit of knowledge, but you don't know it all. And they
right.
just let you run out of what you do know, and then they say something that you have no answer for, and they win.
Well, there's one thing, and I'll yield, but there's one thing online that I have discovered, which some of you guys probably already know about it, but it's the 22 indices, INDICES, for void subject matter jurisdiction. And somebody has gotten together and pulled together statutes that show, like, we could take that in with our courtroom observing. And you
know,
wow, what was that?
Sound like somebody didn't want you to tell us what you discovered.
Well, I'm going to tell you again then. 22 indices for void subject matter jurisdiction. And I believe that the website, I'm not sure, but I think it's UYOURARELAW.com. And that is all one word, those nine letters in front of the .com. But anyway, I'm not suggesting that anybody does this. I'm just saying that it's very interesting reading because they have put the statutes together with these 22 points that would challenge at least the subject matter jurisdiction of a court. And I yield.
Right.
Okay,
well, right.
Robert, what
yes.
you just said, it's urlaw.org. I just received from them an email, and they have four things to say in court, only four things. First of all, you say, I do not consent to these proceedings. Second, your offer is not accepted. Third, I do not consent to being surety for this case and these proceedings. Fourth, I demand the bond be immediately brought forward so I can see who will indemnify me if I am damaged.
What's the second one again?
The second one is your offer is not accepted.
This is on their website?
This was on the email that I received today from urlaw.org.
Yeah, and that fourth point, if anybody had trouble hearing like I did, it's not, I am not a surety to identify this case. It's indemnify, I-N-D-E-M-N-I-F-Y, indemnify.
Okay, I demand the bond be immediately brought forward so I can see who will indemnify me if I am damaged.
Yeah, that. Uh-huh. I couldn't hear you before. I wanted to make sure everybody knew it wasn't identify that it was indemnify.
Right, right.
Well, thank you, Michael, for adding that.
Yep, yep.
And thank you, Jan, for bringing that up. All right, well, we are at the end of our hour, a little over time. And it's been an interesting conversation. And it seems that we are having some very interesting conversations each week, and I appreciate it. So we'll say...
Oh, we appreciate you. We appreciate you, Robert. You're doing a great
job.
Thank you.
You're a good man, Robert.
Well, all I can do is my best.
Well, that's all we are here to do. And everything we do, just do our best and let everything roll off.
Right. So, anyway, have a good week, and hopefully we have some things for next week that will be just as interesting. I'm sure we will.
Very
so
good.
I'll say good night.
Thank you, Robert. Good night. God bless. God bless everybody.
Good night, everybody.